This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley. As an actress, Nancy Marchand arrived in New York just in time to take part in what's been called the Golden Age of Television, doing live TV dramas in the 50s, including the famous Patty Chayefsky play Marty. In the 70s, she took part in another TV classic, co-starring as newspaper publisher Mrs. Pinchon in the CBS series Lou Grant. And at the end of the 90s, she's making a little piece of TV history again, playing against her own image by appearing as a nasty old mafia mom in HBO's The Sopranos. To realize how against type she's playing in her new role, all you have to do is listen to her old ones. She played Rod Steiger's mousy girlfriend in Marty in a live telecast from 1953.
When am I? Am I a leper or something?
It doesn't feel like that, Paul.
That's the story of my life. Just a fat little ugly guy, you know. Every time there's a New Year's Eve party, so I'm the guy they have to get a date for. I'm old enough to know better. I'll get you a package of cigarettes.
Marty, I'd like to see you again. Very much. The reason that I didn't let you kiss me was because I just didn't know how to handle the situation. I think you're the kindest man I ever met. And the reason I tell you this is because I'd like to see you again very much. Well, maybe I'm just too desperate to fall in love. I'm trying too hard. But I know that when you take me home, I'm just going to lie in my bed and I'm going to think about you.
Then here she is, opposite Ed Asner, in a scene from the 70s drama series Lou Grant, playing Mrs. Pinchon.
Mr. Grant, I have enough pressures from politicians and labor unions and churches and schools and Italian Americans and Polish Americans and Mexican Americans, all incensed at one time or another because of something we printed or didn't print. When we moved the bridge column and the day that we kissed off Little Orphan Annie, do you realize how many threats I received against my life?
Mrs. Pinchon, there's a...
No, Mr. Grant, I don't need you to generate any heat. I get enough of that from my family, for want of a more descriptive word. I have two nephews, each more disgusting than the other, each masking his avarice in solicitous murmurings and constant pressures and little whisperings to sell this building. Sell this paper that I love and invest in something more sensitive, more lucrative, like taco stands. A whole greasy chain of them stretching like the Great Wall of China from San Ysidro all the way to the Oregon border. I mean, who knows? Maybe beyond. Taco stands, Mr. Grant. And a few shares of majority stock I hold is my only shield between this once great paper and a thousand-mile ribbon of inedible enchiladas.
And now, finally, here she is, in a clip from the new episode of The Sopranos to be shown this Sunday, as Livia Soprano, who's being visited in the nursing home by her daughter-in-law, played by Edie Falco.
You know, Ma, your son loves you very much. He worries all the time. He felt bad that you didn't come to the open house. And I don't care if you think it's disrespectful, but I want you to cut the drama. It's killing Tony.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about this. This poor mother, nobody loves me, victim crap. It is textbook manipulation, and I hate seeing Tony so upset over it.
I know how to talk to people.
Well, I am a mother too, don't forget. And you know the power that you have, and you use it like a pro.
Power? What power? I don't have power. I'm a shut-in.
You are bigger than life. You are his mother. And I don't think for one second that you don't know what you're doing to him.
Who, me? Me? What did I do?
Look, I didn't come by to argue. I came by to check on you and to bring you the regret.
Nancy Marchand, welcome to Fresh Air.
Oh, thank you very much.
You know, I love this role so much. It is so unlike Mrs. Pinchon or most of the things with which I associate you. I can't even believe it Can you tell me how you do this and how you got to it in the audition?
Well, I was so thrilled that somebody asked me to read for a part like this after playing so many tasteful ladies that I just jumped at it because this was a marriage that I shall always be grateful for. And that is between me playing a part like this and working with David Chase, who is so wise, so intellectually astute. And there you have it. I mean, there we were.
Well, he's the writer-producer of The Sopranos. And
he is, yeah.
And with the script that you auditioned with originally, or the scene, how much of that was on the page? I mean, so much of the grunts and the groans and the snarls and the sounds and the chewing with the mouth open, I mean, that's got to be as much you as it is the writer.
Well, I just came upon some of them. Some things I just came upon when it happened, like the chewing with my mouth open. I thought, oh, that's great. This woman is an animal. She is an animal. And that's what she is. And that's what she does. She carries on a conversation, and she's stuffing her mouth all the time. That was something that happened as we played it. And then I incorporated it into the performance.
Going all the way back to your golden age stuff, I mean, I think your big breakthrough role on television was as Joe in Little Women in Studio One.
Right.
And
hey, you know that.
Yeah, well,
hey,
I mean,
good for you.
And it goes to even better ones that we'll get to in a minute. But if I've got this right, you graduate from Carnegie, and you decide as a young woman that you're just going to be an actress and head off to New York and land there, I guess, in, was it 1949?
Yeah.
Now, how old were you then, and how gutsy were you then to do something like that in such a male-dominated town and such a young industry as television? How'd you do that? How were you allowed to do that?
Oh, listen, it wasn't gutsy. It was dumb. I was so dumb. Nothing stopped me. I just went ahead and did it.
What kind of place was New York like to live as a single woman in the late 40s?
Well, I wasn't single. I had a roommate, and she was my roommate from college, and we were a real couple. We were such a funny twosome and just did anything we wanted to do. We just had a ball. Went to the movies in the middle of the night. And, you know, I mean, we just had a ball.
Now, you were involved in so many of the early television shows like Kraft Television Theater, Goodyear TV Playhouse, Studio One. At the time...
Yeah, but it was all new.
Mm-hmm.
It was all grassroots stuff, you know, and there was a kind of excitement about it because all of a sudden, all those young men who had been in the war and been given the opportunity to crawl through hell, suddenly somebody said to them, "We'll give you a money to educate yourselves." And that was given to them. I mean, that had never happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And there was such an excitement. And an excitement of also of those young men who survived all that. They weren't killed. They didn't lose legs and arms. They survived it. And that excitement transferred itself into a whole new medium, which was television, and it was great.
A lot of people in early television didn't want to get involved at first because they didn't trust the medium, and others dove in purely because it was new. Where did you stand?
Oh, I just dove in because it was work. I loved the work. And I say to this day, I don't think there is a job I've ever done that I haven't learned something from doing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was all new. It was all new.
Let's talk about your most famous role from the 50s, which was playing Clara to Rod Steiger's Butcher Marty in the 1953 piece, which has got to be, along with Requiem for Heavyweight and a couple others, one of the most important pieces of television, early television, ever done. Can you tell us how that came together and what it was like to rehearse it and to mount it?
Well, I don't know how it came together, but because I was unaware of things like that. But anyway, what I did want to talk about was how fabulous Patty Chayefsky as a writer was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would rehearse, and then he'd say to you, "Things going okay?" He was at every rehearsal. He was always at every rehearsal, and he'd say, "Things going okay?" And I'd say, "Well, you know, in the X scene, if you just took out those lines and put them at the beginning of the scene, and then when you get to the end of the scene, you could understand it better." And he'd say, oh, isn't that interesting? Yeah, let me look around. Let me fool around with that.
Did
then
he do it?
Then he'd go into the corner with his typewriter, and there he was. And there, you know, he'd have this scene written. And as you were rehearsing, he would kind of sidle up to you, and he'd pass you this scene. And you'd look at it, and it was perfect. It was perfect.
What do you treasure the most about live television, about the energy when that was going on live?
The energy was like stage energy. Yeah. That's what was great about it.
And you do so much theater and continue to do theater now. Theater energy the same as it used to be?
Well, pretty much, because you've got living people out there. Now, I'm talking about 2 years ago when I did Importance of Being Honest. That's the last time I did a play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and since then, I have come down with, thank you very much, COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And that's why my voice sounds funny. And that's why you might hear me grabbing for breath. But I don't think I have the energy to do a play anymore.
My guest is actress Nancy Marchand. She's co-starring in the HBO series The Sopranos. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is actress Nancy Marchand. In the 1970s TV series Lou Grant, she played the newspaper's publisher, Mrs. Pynchon. Lou Grant, certainly one of your most famous roles. You won 4 Emmys for that one. And in the beginning, James L. Brooks, who was one of the co-creators, was talking about how hard it was to try to come up with a series that was not all drama and was not all comedy, but was a mix.
Yeah.
And now we have things like Northern Exposure, which led to Ally McBeal, so we're more familiar with it. But that was really the first hour-long dramedy. Was it hard to hit that tone on the set when you were starting out?
Well, you know, those guys, as writers, were no slouches. And they knew what they were doing. And it wasn't a struggle. It was just learning the new material and learning the new approach that and that made it work.
Your Mrs. Pynchon character on Lou Grant, did you specifically model her on Katharine Graham, and did you ever hear from her or from other female newspaper editors?
No, no. No, I did not. As at that time, there was a whole pile of women publishers who were widowed, whose husbands had started newspapers. There was one, Ovita Kalpabi, I think, is one of them. And there was one in Cincinnati, and Dorothy Chandler. And there were a lot of them.
One thing I never understood with Lou Grant was why they didn't have a final episode where the newspaper was allowed to fold and give it the same sort of farewell that the Mary Tyler Moore Show had and other shows did. It was yanked off so quickly. Behind the scenes, do you know why?
Yeah, there was... they'd been trying to get rid of that show for a long time, to get rid of Lou Grant for a long time, because Ed was fooling around with El Salvador and trying to, Archbishop Romero Fund, trying to raise money for that. And I think there was a lot of letter writing from people who thought the communists of El Salvador were horrible. Now, these are all sort of halfway house stories. Mm-hmm. I'm not really, I was never really up on all of that kind of stuff. But I had heard that they wrote the sponsors and said, we are not going to, we're not going to buy your products because you are advertising on Lou Grant. It just got too much. You know, every single story that they did on Lou Grant was a real story. During hiatus, the writers used to go from one newspaper to the next and get stories, and then they would come back and they would develop them into episodes.
Well, I'm glad it was there while it was there, and I certainly enjoyed watching it and watching you on that show. What did you like most about playing Mrs. Pynchon?
Well, first of all, I liked having the stroke. I enjoyed that.
Right. Yeah, your character had a stroke and had a stroke and had to come back from it fairly slowly. And this is decades before the same thing happened to Andre Brower on Homicide: Life on the Street.
Right.
So did you have to remain conscious of a slow improvement while you were still doing the rest of the acting?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Now, do you see what you're doing? Do you see The Sopranos overall as being a dramedy like Lou Grant?
But it's more sophisticated, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Much more sophisticated.
I guess what I'm asking is, in terms of your scenes, so many of them, at times you want to laugh at this woman, and at other times you are angry with her, and then it seems tragic, and then it seems howlingly funny again, all in the space of a couple of minutes.
And yeah, but that's what makes it interesting, honey.
Is that what makes it interesting to play too?
Sure.
All right. So there are my last question. There are two episodes left, actually three in this current season of The Sopranos, and HBO has already re-upped it for a second season.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the final two episodes, so I don't know whether you're even in a position to come back next season. But assuming that you are, do you intend to?
Yes.
All right, well, Nancy, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
And I've loved being here.
Nancy Marchand co-stars in the HBO series The Sopranos. I'm David Biancooley, and this is Fresh Air.